computer, it looks like it's 2:30 on the dot. We have one item for this afternoon. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly. She may not be on yet. Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by phone, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcasts of this meeting. The public can also provide written testimony to the Council by emailing the Council Clerk. The Council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do our city's business. And at this point, I'll turn it over to our very able legal counsel to read the rules of order and decorum. Lauren, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. To participate in City Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. The published Council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. And please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Thank you very much, Lauren. Carla, we have one item this afternoon. Could you please read item number 429?
Amend the comprehensive plan map, zoning map, and Title 33 Planning and Zoning to revise the single dwelling residential designations and base zones.
Thank you. Colleagues, today we continue our work on the residential infill project. Before we begin this substantive discussion on REIP, I want to announce that I rent property in a residential zone. Properties in all residential zones could be impacted by the residential infill project. I have no plans and no intent, and frankly, no ability to redevelop or change the use of my property personally. However, out of an abundance of caution, I'm disclosing this as a potential conflict of interest. Colleagues, would you have any disclosures you'd like to make?
Thank you, Mayor. I also rent property within the city limits that would be covered by the legislation we're considering. I also have no ability to make any changes to it because I don't own it. I am a renter, a proud renter. Just for the sake of caution, I want that to be on the public record. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Fritz. Muted.
Sorry. Never mind. I own property in the city of Portland. I will neither benefit nor be damaged by this property, by this proposal to a greater or lesser extent than anybody else, and therefore I continue to participate.
Very good, Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor. I am also a renter and have no ability to benefit from this legislation, similar to what everyone else said.
Thank you, Commissioner Udaly. As a recap of where we are in the project, after hearing public testimony in January and holding two work sessions on January 29th and then again on February 12th, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff have developed concepts for amendments to the proposed draft of the residential infill project and reopened the record for public comment. The public can read and submit written testimony about the proposal by visiting the BPS testimony app page of the project. After a truly impressive amount of work and coordination from the staffs at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Bureau of Development Services, Portland Bureau of Transportation, the Bureau of Environmental Services, the Water and Housing Bureaus, and of course, our city attorneys, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will present the complete package of amendments. I want to thank our city staff for their hard work to help prepare these proposals for the City Council. I also want to thank those who submitted their comments and met with staff to help strengthen the original proposal. I'm now going to turn this over to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability Director, Andrea Durbin, to walk us through the agenda this afternoon. Good afternoon, Andrea. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Mayor. I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you, Mayor and City Council. It's a pleasure to be back here talking to you all about residential infill. We've organized the agenda into two parts today. First, staff will introduce and briefly review the draft amendments to the residential infill project. The draft amendments were shared with the public in early March. We suggest that Council move and second these amendments prior to taking public testimony today. We also suggest that the City Council hold its deliberations on the amendments until after hearing testimony. We will return to City Council on June 18th for deliberation and a vote on the amendments, with a final vote on the package set for July. The second part of today's agenda will be public testimony. We ask that this testimony be focused on the package of amendments. We are recommending a 2-minute limit on testimony to ensure that we can hear from as many people as possible. And when the record closed last night, we had 96 people sign up to testify. We've reserved time on June 11th, starting at 2:40 in the afternoon, in case people who've signed up for today's testimony are not able to speak, they will have an opportunity to come back.
Before you move on from that, Andrea, it looks like Commissioner Fritz had a question about that specifically.
Sure. So thank you, Mayor. I am concerned about limiting testimony to 2 minutes. I realize that there are 90 plus people signed up. On the other hand, I'm getting 1,000 emails a day. So normally we would say, please send in your testimony in writing, but I cannot promise that I'm able to get to everybody's testimony on account that there's so much incoming input on other issues right now. With 90 people, if we were to allow the 3 minutes, we could still get through them in 3 hours, I mean, 2 hearings. So if you please consider that, or at least, Mayor, being somewhat lenient if people are on point and still have something new to say, to allow them to go to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah, and I certainly don't have any, I have no problem with that, commissioners. As people know, I tend to be pretty lenient when it comes to the timeframes, particularly since everybody's sort of trying to figure out the technology here. But I will ask, when we get to the council test or to the public testimony, that people do try to respect the fact that there are many, many people who'd like to be heard. So we'll encourage people not to give repetitive testimony. It's okay just to say, I also agree on point X without going into all of it. So we'll just ask people to do that, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mayor. We've heard from some comments that we've received so far that there's a lot of concern from the public that density is a contributing factor for a number of the COVID-19 cases, while the data shows us otherwise. Clearly, a city's design and development, as well as social, economic, and natural environment conditions, affect public health outcomes and the well-being of communities. Also, as we are seeing every day and more broadly acknowledging, our history and systems have built inequities based on race into the structure of our city. When other factors that contribute to livability and health are considered, for example, living wages, educational opportunities, access to healthcare and affordable housing, dense cities are actually safer from pandemics than less dense areas. PSU professor Vivek Chanda said it well recently. He said, cities might actually become the safest places to be during the next pandemic. Denser spaces can make it easier to monitor people's health and track exposure, communicate risks and prevention strategies, and rush protective gear and prescription drugs to outbreak hotspots. I recognize that the COVID-19 crisis has raised many, many concerns, but we hope that as we discuss residential infill today, that we will refrain from reducing a complex global pandemic to arguments for or against density. And finally, given our nation's crisis today rooted in racism, anti-Blackness, and white supremacy, the City Council's consideration of opening up single family zoning for middle housing options is an opportunity to demonstrate that we can right these wrongs. We can unbuild our unjust land use systems. As the City of Portland looks for ways to demonstrate that we are going to talk less and act more, adopting residential infill is that opportunity to create more inclusive neighborhoods, expand housing opportunities to more residents, provide safer access to schools and closer transit options, including Black, Indigenous, and people of color. We cannot wait to undo these past harms any longer. And now I'd like to invite BPS staff Morgan Tracy and Sandra Wood to present the amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of City Council. I hope that you are seeing my presentation. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, we can. We can Great. See it. Thank you.
I'm Morgan Tracy, project manager for the Residential Infill Project. With me today is Sandra Wood, co-development manager with BPS and host of our meeting this morning or this afternoon. Joe Zender, chief planner, as well as Bob Kellett and Kirk Kruger from PBOT. Before we cover the more fine-grained aspects of today's subject matter, I wanted to reiterate the framework for what the Residential Infill Project achieves. It increases access to more types of housing in all Portland neighborhoods. It allows for more units at lower prices on each lot. It applies new limits on building scale and height, and it helps reduce displacement overall. Following your public hearings on January 15th and 16th and your two work sessions on January 29th and February 12th to review several potential amendment ideas, staff has developed the following six potential amendments to the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommended draft for your consideration. My intention today is to provide a short summary of all the amendments. This will help us move through the staff presentation more quickly and allow more time for the public to testify. Before we begin, I would like to note that the project documents that comprise the project record are included on the project website at www.portland.gov/BPS/rep and are hereby entered into the official record. Amendment number one includes four distinct parts. These are the most technical in nature and are necessary to address changes in the code package since the Planning Commission's vote last spring. They align the code updates to reflect changes adopted by Better Housing by Design. They align the proposed visibility standard in the single dwelling zones to match the multi-dwelling zones. They update map changes to reflect zoning changes completed as part of the 82nd Avenue project. They clean up a few language consistency issues, including a cleanup to a correction where we had changed how height would be measured in mixed-use zones. This correction will essentially leave the height method the same as it is today for those zones. Amendment package number two responds to requirements in the recently passed House Bill 2001. Currently, duplexes are limited to corner lots in single dwelling zones. The Planning Commission's recommendation allows interior lot duplexes, except in natural resource and hazard constrained areas, which are identified by our Z overlay. HB 2001, which passed after the PSC's vote, specifies that cities must allow a duplex on each lot that allows for the development of a house. This amendment aligns the Residential Infill Project with the House bill by allowing duplexes on all lots in the R2.5 through R7 zones, including those lots in the Z overlay. The amendment also lifts the duplex restriction created for small flag lots, which only allow for a house. Amendment package three includes code changes related to the implementation of Senate Bill 534. This bill requires cities to allow development of at least one dwelling unit on pre-existing platted lots and makes no distinction based on the zoning, lot size, or other lot dimensions. However, it does provide that the presence of certain constraints can exclude a lot from being considered buildable. These amendments establish rules to confirm substandard platted lots. Lots of record and lot remnants, on the other hand, will continue to be subject to the same standards and minimum dimensional requirements that apply today. For the remaining substandard platted lots that don't meet the base zone sizes, they would be considered buildable unless the lot is steeply sloping, it's in the 100-year floodplain, or it's within the environmental overlay zone. The fourth amendment package is about streamlining processes to make it easier and less costly to reconfigure narrow lots into wider lots. Currently, when a property owner wants to convert three narrow lots into two wider lots, a two-step process is required. First, a lot consolidation, followed by a property line adjustment, which adds time and cost to this whole process. This amendment would combine both of these processes into a single replat process. This takes us to number five. Number five is a non-zoning code amendment. And you will recall that the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendation includes a limitation on three or more units when the site is located on Gravel Street, like indicated here in this picture. At our last work session, Council gave BPS direction to explore options to address infrastructure needs while also furthering our climate and equity goals. The idea behind Amendment 5 was to allow only three and more units when lots have frontage on improved streets, in part because the cost of those improvements can sometimes be disproportionate to the level of impact, meaning that the city is legally unable to require those improvements. And also because when these improvements are built in the middle of unimproved streets, they result in piecemeal improvements that don't connect efficiently to the overall system. Most commissioners weren't convinced that the concept that we'd shared was the right one and asked us to work with infrastructure bureaus to recommend the best solution possible. We've been meeting with our colleagues, and our conclusion is that the best solution is not to amend the RIP policy, but to work with PBOT to expand the Local Transportation Improvement Charge, or LTIC, program to apply to three or more units on unimproved streets located in these single dwelling zones. Therefore, our recommendation is that number 5 is a non-zoning code amendment. Instead, PBOT will be bringing the necessary changes to LTIC and Title 17 separately for Council's review next week on June 10th. And that hearing starts at 4 o'clock. The deeper affordability bonus was supported by many who testified during the public hearings in January. The proposed amendment would provide for a larger FAR, a bit more height to allow 3 full floors, and up to 6 units when at least half of the units are affordable to households earning up to 60% of the median family income. 2 of these units will also be required to be visitable. 60% of the median family income works out to about $1,200 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment. For comparison, the average rent in Portland for a 2-bedroom apartment, including both old and new construction, is about $1,600 a month. Market rates for a new 2-bedroom apartment are closer to $2,000 a month. So this represents the difference between a family earning $48,000 a year and a family earning $78,000 a year. Due to this level of rent restriction, this bonus structure is generally infeasible for for-profit builders, but nonprofit developers who have a different business model and can bring other funding sources may benefit by being able to better compete for these properties. The final amendment relates to historic resources, and more specifically, conservation resources. Currently, in historic districts, those are the areas shown in blue on this map, a demolition review is already required. However, in conservation districts, the brown areas shown in and around Albina, in these cases, only a 120-day delay is required prior to deconstruction. This is something that a forthcoming project from our bureau, the Historic Resources Code Project, will be evaluating. Amendment number 7 puts in place a restriction in the interim that when these resources are demolished, these sites cannot build 3 or more units for a period of 10 years. They are still able to utilize the provisions for additional ADUs or converting existing houses to triplexes or fourplexes. So for next steps, since it's likely we won't get through all of your testimony today, City Council will hear the remaining testimony about the package of amendments on June 11th, starting at 2:40 p.m. The record for written testimony will remain open until June 11th, at 8 p.m. Council will return and vote on the amendments on June 18th. Staff will then incorporate the approved changes into an as amended draft for Council's consideration later in July. That concludes my presentation, and I'll turn it back to you, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I know this is the result of countless hours of working with our infrastructure bureaus, our community members and organizations, and affordable housing developers. And I want to just acknowledge, I appreciate how much effort's gone into this amendment package. So colleagues, I have a question. Do I have a motion to move the residential infill projects amendment packages as a group for discussion and public testimony?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Udaly. Any comments prior to us? No, we're going to keep that open. So it is moved and it is there. Thank you. Please, we're going to get to the public testimony piece right now. We're going to begin public testimony. Each person will have, as we stated earlier, 2 minutes to testify. We'll be somewhat flexible, but again, folks, given We have so many people who want to be heard, and we want to hear everyone. Please keep your remarks as succinct as possible. And so, and I also want to remind anyone who may be testifying today as a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity that you're authorized to represent in accordance with Title II of our city's code. Carla, would you go ahead and kick us off, please?
Okay, the first person is Julie Metz, and she'll be followed by David Sweet.
Good afternoon. I'm Julia Metz with Catholic Charities of Oregon. Today, I'm also speaking on behalf of Housing Oregon's Portland Metro Policy Council, which you may recall consists of a diverse set of affordable housing organizations from across the Portland metro area. I'm here to express our support of Amendment 6, Deeper Affordability Infill Option. Our written testimony provides more detail, but I would like to highlight some of the positive impacts that this will have on our ability to provide affordable housing. While we acknowledge that the existing affordability bonuses, as well as the proposed deeper affordability option, do not require or inherently guarantee affordable housing as part of the residential infill project, we would like to emphasize the important role that these bonuses play in opening the door to an option that currently does not exist. As we have previously noted, increased density translates to serving more households with less subsidy and/or serving households at lower incomes. An increase in FAR allowances in conjunction with an increase in number of units allowed also provides a path forward for providing more affordable family-sized units per lot, which we know are sorely needed across the city. The modest increase in height allowance with this amendment is also an important piece to providing affordable housing developers with the flexibility to design and develop housing that responds to the needs and preferences of the communities we serve. We look forward to ongoing dialogue about ways that we can work with the City Council to continue expanding affordable housing choices throughout the city, mitigating displacement that has occurred, and to be proactive in preventing future displacement. We are excited by the opportunities that will be provided through the Residential Info Project and the proposed amendment, but we know that there will continue to be ways to take the discussion even further, especially if we continue to break down silos between city bureaus and departments. On a personal but related note, I implore you to keep listening and truly hear the messages of protesters and the Black community and leaders. We can do better. We have to do better. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
Next is David Sweet, followed by Nicole Johnson.
Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. And thank you to the council for taking the time in this fraught period to hear this also important issue. And I'm David Sweet. I represent the Cully Association of Neighbors, and speaking for the entire Cully community, I want to first thank Commissioner Hugh Daly, Mayor Wheeler, the entire council, and the infrastructure bureaus for abandoning the infrastructure amendment. It would have prevented development of moderately priced housing on about half of Cully's residential lots and led to more gentrification and displacement. And following that, thanks to Commissioner Hugh Daly and the PBOT staff for moving quickly to expand the local transportation infrastructure charge to include all developments in single dwelling zones. Cully needs the LTIC to be expanded in order for us to realize the benefits of residential infill. We also want to encourage you to adopt the deeper affordability bonus amendment. This amendment was created in collaboration with affordable housing developers who have said they can and will use it. Most of Cully is zoned for single dwellings, and this amendment will allow affordable housing developers to compete for those lots and build more affordable housing in Cully. Inclusive Cully is our anti-displacement policy that we adopted over 4 years ago. The deeper affordability bonus amendment would help us address more than half of the goals that we established in that policy. One of those goals reads, encourage city agencies to develop and implement strategies to prevent displacement. We want to encourage you to continue your work on anti-displacement strategies. We note that residential infill is a residential anti-displacement strategy. And the deeper affordability bonus amendment is also, but more can and should be done. And the Cully community looks forward to working with the city to develop and implement such strategies, preserving the diversity that makes Cully the special place that it is. Thank you.
Thank you, David. We appreciate it. Thanks for your testimony.
Next is Nicole Johnson, and she'll be followed by Tony Jordan.
Good afternoon, Nicole.
Hello. Good afternoon, Mayor and Portland City Council. My name is Nicole Johnson. I am with 1000 Friends of Oregon, and I just would like to thank you for continuing your work on the Residential Infill Project. As you may know, 1000 Friends of Oregon seeks to create sustainable, vibrant, healthy, and livable communities through smart land use and planning. Our mission is working with Oregonians to enhance our quality of life by building livable urban and rural communities, protecting family farms and forests, and conserving natural areas. As an organization, we seek to support policy, planning, and advocacy that builds and improves Oregon State's land use planning goals. And within these goals, housing is addressed in Goal 10, which calls for adequate numbers of needed housing units, at price ranges and rent levels, which are consumerant with the financial capabilities of Oregon households and allows for flexibility of housing location type and density. And it's for these reasons that we support the passage of the Residential Info Project and its goals to create urban livable communities. By June 30th, 2022, Portland needs to be in compliance with House Bill 2001, which requires cities to allow for duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, and other types of workforce and missing middle housing. We are pleased to see that the city is taking serious action to be in compliance. We support the city in creating comprehensive and consistent code language. We strongly support Amendment 6 and also recognize that the zoning code change does not ensure affordability in itself. But by aligning with the deeper affordability bonus found in the Better Housing by Design code change, we think this amendment moves the policy in the right direction. We strongly oppose Amendment 7. This amendment provides no benefit and further creates exclusionary, wealthy neighborhoods. All neighborhoods need to be open for affordable and diverse housing options. We don't support this amendment because it would potentially exclude wide swaths of some neighborhoods from these options, continuing to the trend of unaffordable single detached dwellings. Again, we appreciate that you're working towards greater housing options for Portlanders while balancing trade-offs with existing development. With that said, we are currently in a housing crisis and we need to act swiftly. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is Tony Jordan, and he'll be followed by Ian McKenzie.
Good afternoon, Tony. Tony, are you with us today?
Yes, yeah, sorry. I had a technical issue. Good morning. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tony Jordan, and I'm on the line to support the Residential Info Project, and in particular, to ask you to support Amendment 6, the Deeper Affordability Amendment. There are some who will argue that the times are too uncertain right now to pass policy like RIP. I disagree. Given the lengthy public process, like 6 years we've undertaken, Portland is lucky to have such a vetted and prepared policy ready to go. The housing RIP will allow is small enough in scale to be built during a recession. It's flexible enough to adapt to unforeseen changes in the future, and it will help to diversify and strengthen our communities by providing more homes of all types in all neighborhoods. Ending exclusionary zoning, which has descended from racist deed restrictions and redlining, is certainly no less important right now as the nation protests the longstanding injustices perpetrated on our Black neighbors, friends, family members, and fellow citizens, and as police brutalize protesters for simply demanding the recognition of the universal truth that Black lives matter. So I ask you to pass RIP, and in particular to support Amendment 6, the Deeper Affordability Amendment, and I remind you that I and many, many others asked for a comprehensive anti-displacement strategy, including tenant opportunity to purchase at the last hearings. We would like to see a fast-track effort to develop TOPA and the other policies asked for. RIP is clearly not a standalone solution for our housing crisis, but it is an important foundation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Ian McKenzie, and he will be followed by Doug Klotz.
Good afternoon, Ian.
My name is Ian McKenzie. I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to listen to testimony in this particular moment. I've supported the Residential Info Project for a long time, and I believe that you should pass it. I am particularly in support of Amendment Number 6, the Deeper Affordability Bonus. This amendment could only be used by developers, mostly nonprofits, who are planning to build regulated affordable housing. If I came to you today with a proposal to ban affordable housing on 77% of the residential land in Portland, you would probably be horrified. But that's what we've done in our zoning code. We can not only fix that, but with Amendment 6, give affordable housing providers a competitive advantage in securing land to build on. Changing our zoning code won't solve all the inequities that there are in housing. Far from it. This council has taken some great actions, like the Fair Access and Minting Ordinance, and there are other actions yet to come. When those come before you, I plan to be there to support them. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is Doug Klotz, and he'll be followed by Tricia Patterson.
Hello, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Doug Klotz. I appreciate your attention to this important measure, even in the middle of a national and international crisis. The residential infill project has been over 5 years in process. It will reduce displacement of low-income tenants in the city and also reduce market-rate housing prices at no cost to the public. The Deeper Affordability Amendment, number 6, sharply reduces the per-unit cost for developers who can then create below-market housing on any lot. Amendments 1 to 4 are necessary fixes. I oppose Amendment 7, which will result in luxury single-family houses instead of the needed smaller, cheaper units when those lots are developed. I also support the path chosen with the LTIC instead of Amendment 5. The residential infill project reforms are only part of what the city needs to do. Please fund and implement a robust anti-displacement strategy led by community experts such as PAALF. Thanks to the staff, the PSC, and council for your support over these years, and I ask you to adopt the Residential Infill Project and Amendments 1 to 4 and Amendment 6. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Next is Tricia Patterson, followed by Heidi Hart.
Good afternoon, Tricia.
Hi. Hello. My name is Tricia Patterson, and I'm speaking on behalf of Portland Neighbors Welcome. Portland Neighbors Welcome is a grassroots pro-housing, pro-tenant organization. We are proud to testify as advocates for a holistic suite of policies that will address the housing crisis from multiple angles. So thank you, Council, for making the time for this issue amid this moment of national crisis. Portland Neighbors Welcome supports Amendments 1 through 4 and Amendment 6. We strongly oppose Amendment 5 as originally proposed, as well as Amendments 7 through 17. So we'll go quickly. Amendment 6, we enthusiastically support the compromise deeper affordability bonus and urge its passage. It's great. It will facilitate building homes for many folks who don't qualify for Section 8, but also can't afford your typical market rate housing. It also allows for up to 6 much-needed family-sized homes on a typical lot, all while the proposed floor area ratio that's significantly lower than what is currently allowed. On Amendment 5, we really applaud Council's decision to just eliminate this amendment. It would have exacerbated displacement and exclusionary zoning by blocking, you know, your smaller, less expensive homes in both displacement risk areas like Cully and East Portland and affluent places like much of Southwest Portland. So we encourage efforts to find a long-term solution for sidewalk infill and shared street designs. In particular, we're open to raising LTIC fees as long as this doesn't end up primarily incentivizing more 1 and 2 unit structures, which are the most infrastructure inefficient housing types. On Amendment 7, we oppose it as it would, you know, effectively block smaller, lower cost homes while doing nothing to actually incentivize adaptive reuse of historic resources through internal conversion. And a major risk of this amendment is allowing a future council to potentially create new conservation districts as a way to preserve exclusivity. On the tabled amendments 8 through 17, we oppose these amendments. They are unreasonable, unworkable. They undermine the fundamental purpose of RIP, and council was right to table them way back in February. They should remain tabled. And finally, Portland Neighbors Welcome supports Amendments 1 through 4 to ensure the code functions well and complies with state law. We also support moving swiftly on TOPA after RIT passes. By passing the residential infill with Amendments 1 through 4 and 6, we can renounce the racist pattern of exclusionary zoning that has shaped our city for decades and open up our neighborhoods to more Portlanders with abundant and less expensive housing options. Yet, as important as the completion of this project is, more action is needed. A citywide anti-displacement strategy, new funding to fight homelessness and build deeply affordable homes, and zoning reforms to bring larger mixed-income buildings to currently exclusive areas near transit and jobs. We really look forward to working together on these fronts in the future, and we thank you so much for working so hard to get this right.
Thank you, Tricia.
Thank you.
Next is Heidi Hart, followed by Stephen Judkins.
Hello, Heidi.
Hi, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Heidi Hart. Thank you for listening to testimony during this time of national crisis. The Deeper Affordability Amendment, Amendment 6, is great because it reduces the cost per unit for developers to create below market housing in more areas. I also generally support the residential infill project because it is projected to reduce displacement and reduce market rate housing prices while costing nothing to the public. Finally, please continue working on further reforms, including an anti-displacement strategy led by community experts. Thank you.
Next is Stephen Judkins, followed by Daniel Chandler Klein.
Thank you.
Hi there. Thank you very much for making the time right now for this hearing. I wish I could say that residential infill project would solve all the problems Portland is facing. I know it won't. I know this is a limited incremental step, but it's such a step in the right direction. Seeing us address our dual housing crises, the middle class being forced out, and the loss of any affordable housing and the displacement of so many people from the city, already in dire situation because of the pandemic. Addressing both of these in concert is what we need to do to move forward, build a coalition. With that, I think it's really important that we include Amendment 6 as part of this package, making sure that deeply affordable housing developers are getting an advantage here and able to see develop housing that will help the most disadvantaged in the city. Really optimistic to see us go down this path and not follow something like the Bay Area or San Francisco, where the city becomes basically a playground for the rich. Appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Stephen.
Next is Daniel Chandler Klein, followed by Matt Kelly.
Welcome, Daniel.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Chandler Klein, and I'm here today to support the residential infill proposal along with Amendment 6, the Deeper Affordability Bonus Amendment. In the summer of 2018, I started searching for a home in Portland to purchase. The vast majority of options available to me were single-family houses. Not only were these houses unaffordable to me, but they were also not the type of housing that I needed. After some extensive searching, I was able to find a garden apartment for sale in a 10-unit building. It was not only within my budget, but provided me with the type of housing that I needed. My home was built in 1947, before middle-density housing was banned in the majority of Portland. Because someone was able to build this type of multifamily middle-density housing 73 years ago, I was not only able to purchase a home within the city of Portland, I was able to purchase a home that is close to work, bars and restaurants, grocery stores, and most importantly, public transit. Had this type of housing not been available to me, I would have ended up purchasing a home on the outskirts of the city, driving my car to work every day, adding to our already congested streets and freeways. Instead, I bike to work every day. While Amendment 6 would still not allow modest 10-unit buildings like mine, it strikes a good balance between increasing housing supply without changing neighborhoods too rapidly. It also it allows other people to share in the wealth-building opportunity of home ownership, something that I have been so incredibly lucky to have achieved. I want everyone in Portland to have that same opportunity. I strongly encourage the Council to support Amendment 6 in addition to Amendments 1 through 4 and allow people to choose the type of housing that works best for them. I would also like to encourage the council to oppose Amendment 7. It does nothing to stop or reduce demolitions and uses vague terminology such as historic to stop housing from being built in certain areas of the city. The housing crisis is a crisis that affects each and every one of us, and it's up to every person and every neighborhood to do its part in providing more housing. We will not fix this issue if we limit new housing to only certain neighborhoods. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is Matt Kelly, followed by David Binning.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Kelly, and I am a City of Portland employee, but the views I'm expressing today are my own, and I prepared and am delivering this testimony outside of my work hours. I deeply appreciate your making the time for this important work right now. And I really encourage you to support today's ordinance and the amendments that are supported by Portland Neighbors Welcome. The Residential Info Project is carefully crafted policy. It involved a huge amount of public involvement, and it's projected to reduce displacement and market rate housing costs at no cost to the public. I especially encourage you, like many others today, to support Amendment 6 to allow for deeper affordability. This amendment reduces the per unit cost for developers to create below market housing on any lot. And this is good because it allows for deeper affordability in neighborhoods across our city. As important as the Residential Info Project is, it, as many others have said, it's only one part of the solution to our housing problems. And among other things, we need to create a meaningful and funded anti-displacement strategy led by community experts. Thank you for supporting the Residential Info Project to increase housing opportunities in Portland, and thank you for continuing to work with community experts to ensure that everyone in our city has access to housing. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Next is David Binning, followed by Brad Baker.
Hi, David.
Hello.
That's it.
Good.
I'm David Binning, and I do want to thank all of you, the mayor and commissioners, for being here and for the years of work that have gone into this. I'm testifying to express my support for the Residential Info Project, and especially for Amendment 6, the Deeper Affordability Bonus, which I know you've heard in previous testimony, affordable housing providers have been asking for so that they can make the best use of their resources to add homes for people who need them. I really appreciate Commissioners Udaly and Hardesty, the focus that you brought to keeping affordability and displacement at the foreground of this conversation. And I hope that you'll work with your colleagues on policies that affirmatively pursue those ends. Right now, I think the Residential Info Project is a necessary first step, really just in getting the city out of its own way so that our zoning rules aren't actively shutting out more affordable homes. That's all I got to say today. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, David.
Next is Brad Baker, followed by Aaron Brown.
Brad, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Brad Baker, and I'm the chair of Elliott Neighborhood Association's Land Use and Transportation Committee. I'd like to thank you for your continuing to work on the Residential Info Project and moving it forward. The Elliott Neighborhood Land Use and Transportation Committee has sent you many letters in support of RIP, and we sent you one recently on the proposed amendments. Rather than read the whole letter, I'll just briefly summarize. We ask that you please oppose Amendment 5. We ask that you please support Amendment 6, the deeper affordability bonus. And finally, we ask that you please oppose Amendment 7. I particularly want to call out our opposition to Amendment 7, since our neighborhood contains the Elliott Conservation District. While the intention of the amendment is historic preservation, we worry that the amendment is misguided and the outcomes would not actually meet their intention, nor would they be beneficial for our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Aaron Brown, followed by Donna Cohen.
Good afternoon. Can folks hear me? Yes.
Yeah, loud and clear, Aaron.
Awesome. Good afternoon. My name is Aaron Brown. I am a renter living in the St. John's neighborhood of North Portland. There are clearly more pressing matters that the city needs to be addressing at this moment than reviewing a thoroughly researched and thoughtfully discussed zoning change for housing affordability and climate justice that has already received hours and hours of public testimony over the past 5 years. So I'll be very brief. Please vote in support of the Residential Info Project. Please support Amendment 6 in support of the Deeper Affordability Bonus. Please aggressively move forward with the tenant protections proposed by other community organizations. Please oppose Amendment 7. And please allow me to live in a neighborhood with more neighbors. And finally, please stop using tear gas on peaceful protesters. Thank you. I yield my time.
Thank you.
Next is Donna Cohen, followed by Brian Derrick.
Hi, I'm Donna Cohen from St. John's. Almost 17 years ago, I was the beneficiary of an affordable housing program, and it radically changed my life for the better. It allowed me to become a homeowner also. I fully support the Deeper Affordability Amendment. It's also very important that we allow people of mixed incomes to live throughout the city. All neighborhoods should share in welcoming all residents. A while back, I came to council during a general communications time to tell you about a reporter in Houston I heard on NPR. She was interviewing a woman about a plan for affordable housing in her middle-class neighborhood. The woman said she didn't think those who would live in the housing would fit in her neighborhood and didn't want the housing there. About a minute later, she talked about how she didn't understand those who say that everyone doesn't have the same opportunities. Boy. Let's not let people with those attitudes determine Portland's housing policy. The Deeper Affordability Amendment is a good start. Let's go further. The pandemic has only increased housing crisis. We need to continue to find more sources of funding for affordable housing, rental assistance, and houseless programs. I do appreciate the efforts the city has made. Let's keep working to solve these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna.
Next is Leon Porter, followed by James Offsink.
Hi, I'm Leon Porter. I support RIP and its amendments 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. But please reject Amendment 7, which would prohibit development of smallplexes or multiple ADUs on almost any lot where a historic resource was demolished within the past 10 years. The problem with this idea is that smallplexes and ADUs are the main form of less expensive housing that RIP will allow. Since Portland's designated historic resources are disproportionately located in wealthy neighborhoods, Amendment 7 would make it especially hard to add less expensive housing in Portland's most exclusionary areas. The amendment wouldn't result in many old homes being preserved through internal conversion either, because state and city regulations make most internal conversions prohibitively difficult and expensive. It's puzzling that Amendment 7 would allow an older home to be demolished and replaced with a far more expensive new single-family home that only the rich could afford, but wouldn't allow that same older home to be replaced with housing for several families of middle or lower incomes. Amendment 7 would not preserve many historic resources, but would ensure that only the most exclusive homes are built to replace historic resources in the most exclusive neighborhoods. If our goal is historic preservation without economic exclusion, then it would make more sense to turn Amendment 7 on its head, prohibit new single-family homes on lots where historic resources have been demolished, but allow smallplexes with less expensive homes to be built on those lots instead. That's all. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is James Offsink, followed by Mary Vogel.
Hi, James.
Hello. Thank you for Mayor Wheeler and members of the council for hearing us today. I'm James Offsink. I'm involved in numerous civic organizations, but today I'm speaking in a personal capacity. I'm testifying in support of the residential infill project and encouraging you to go further and to see the future of the city as a compact and walkable place where there's housing affordable to all Portlanders at every income level and where everyone can live in a walkable and connected community. I'm a resident of Southeast Portland. I've spent a lot of time here. When I ran for office in 2016, I knocked on thousands of doors, and there's really something special about the neighborhoods where there was infill historically. If it's, you know, the garden apartment complexes or buildings that have been older home, Victorian or something, divided into multiple units, you can really feel a deeper sense of community there, and neighbors who know and love each other. I've also seen within my own direct neighborhood, I live actually just off the Division, and I love all of the new influx of neighbors and businesses and thriving activity. I've also seen the darker side of our current code system where several houses in my block, older homes that were smaller, were taken down, demolished, and then put up with much more expensive single family homes on the same lot, thus displacing former neighbors, getting rid of naturally affordable housing and replacing the neighborhood with older, wealthier, and whiter community members. Specifically with respect to the issues at hand today, I wanted to express my support for amendments 1 through 4, which will create more housing at lower prices in neighborhoods across the city and welcome new neighbors to everywhere across our great city. I strongly support Amendment 6 and the deeper affordability. As others have said, I oppose Amendment 7, which would not lead to reuse, but instead to more expensive homes like we see already. I want to thank the council for removing Amendment 5. And in summary, when I think ahead to the Portland of the future, to the legacy that's being created right here and now with these decisions, I think this project with the amendments as discussed takes important first steps towards creating the diverse, affordable, and connected Portland of the future. So I thank you for your consideration, and I hope that you'll pass it as amended.
James, I'm sorry, I cut out here. Can you just quickly, which amendments, just number the ones you supported and the ones you did not?
Sure, support amendments 1 through 4 and 6. Don't support amendment 7, and thank the council for removing consideration of amendment 5.
Got it, thank you, appreciate it.
Yep.
We'll hear from Mary Vogel and then Michael Anderson.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mayor. Commissioners, I'm Mary Vogel, principal of Plan Green and co-founder of Portland Small Developer Alliance. After the events of this week, I hope the amendments before you, as well as RIP itself, can play a small role in allaying some of the pent-up anger at a system that especially excludes Black Americans. In consideration of Denise McGriff's March 10th testimony about unequal impact of RIP on African-American historic resources, we do not suggest eliminating Amendment 7, though we feel it has an enormous loophole. Could it instead apply only to the area that was part of the 1993 Albina Plan? This way, wealthy neighborhoods with historic designations won't be able to weasel out of providing more housing choice as those testifying against Amendment 7 fear. Now, if the goal is to encourage adaptive reuse of historic resources, the city needs to provide building code changes and appropriate incentives to ensure their success. In PSDA's February 13th testimony, Garland Woodsong had in-depth suggestions for regulatory changes. It covered building code classification, then such common items in the Oregon State Building Code as fire sprinklers, window openings, and insulation that make it very difficult and expensive to do internal conversion of existing homes. Portland City Code largely obstructs adaptive reuse of large single-family homes for group living as well. We are aware that city staff is already working to change some of these regulations at both the state and local level, and we hope we can coalesce folks to support the city's efforts in the building code change process as soon as you pass RIP. Continued work on such changes, as well as incentives, will make it economically feasible to adapt and reuse historic homes at reduced costs without any sacrifices to safety or health. And we have commented on Amendment 6 in other testimonies on MAP app and orally as well. So I'm gonna just leave it at this. In terms of Amendment 7.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Next is Michael Anderson, followed by Robert Hemphill.
Very good. Hi, Michael.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thanks for taking time in this pivotal moment for attention to this structural issue. My name is Michael Anderson. I'm a senior researcher on housing and transportation for Sightline Institute, a sustainability think tank for the Pacific Northwest. We strongly support the residential infill project, the technical amendments, and the deeper affordability amendment 6 for the many reasons others have specified and will be specifying. I want to share a little recent research on the pandemic. In thinking about this issue, it's useful to distinguish between residential density, that is homes per acre, and residential crowding, that is people per bedroom. The experiences of Taipei, Tokyo, and Seoul this year clearly show that homes per acre is not a primary indicator of infection risk. The publication Inside Housing, however, did recently publish an enlightening analysis of per capita COVID death rates. It showed a strong relationship between fatalities and the number of people per bedroom in a given home. This underscores what we know about the coronavirus. A huge share of infections occur indoors among members of the same household. There's reason to believe that multi-generational households are particularly vulnerable. According to Pew Research, American householders identifying as Asian, Black, and Hispanic are almost twice as likely as white Americans to live in multi-generational households. For people at risk in this pandemic, being able to afford a place of one's own or a room of one's own, or just a room in which one is able to isolate to protect the life of a loved one means even more than it always does. This project and its amendments promise to make living space more affordable to more people in very slow motion. It will not affect this pandemic. Abundant, better distributed housing will, however, make us more resilient for the next pandemic, as it will prepare us for so many other trials to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Next is Robert Hemphill, followed by Adi Leverett.
Good afternoon, counselors. My name is Robert Hemphill. I'm a renter in the Kearns neighborhood, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all today. I know that there's a lot calling for your attention right now. I'm here to reiterate my support for the Residential Infill Project and to add to my testimony to that of Portland Neighbors Welcome and 1,000 Friends of Oregon in supporting the technical amendments, Amendment 6, and opposing Amendment 7. And they've well articulated why to support that. But stepping out a second, I just want to say that exclusive zoning has long been used for racial segregation purposes, like from its inception, from the initial Chinese Laundry Exclusion Act, right? And so while passing RIP is not gonna right all of our wrongs in the system, it's a step forward in dismantling a racist housing system that is designed for exclusion. And I'm gonna be here to support future efforts to continue dismantling these institutions that uphold white supremacy, and I want to urge you to do the same. And that includes things like a meaningful anti-displacement strategy that are led by the at-risk communities. RIP, it's carefully crafted, it's a long-awaited reform. Things like Amendment 6 reflect the possibility of delivering real affordable units in our city at little cost to the public. And Amendment 7 jeopardizes the benefits to everyone and opening loopholes for future exclusion around our city. Thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
Next is Amy Leverett, followed by Nolan Leonhardt.
Amy.
Hi, commissioners. My name is Adi Leverett, and I'm here on behalf of Business for Better Portland. I started writing this testimony 3 months ago when this hearing was originally scheduled. I don't think any of us could have imagined how extremely the world would change in such a short time. March feels like another dimension, and it's just starting to dawn on us now that we aren't ever going back to normal. But we know that's a good thing, because our old normal is one in which safety, justice, and opportunity are benefits of privilege rather than universal rights. We refuse to go back to that normal, to all of us. In this.
Adi, can you do me a favor? We're not hearing you. You're breaking up a little bit. Or is it just my computer? Is she breaking up to you guys? Adi, can you turn up and your screen's off? Try again. Let's see if we can get better reception.
Sorry. Yeah, you were breaking up too. Is this better?
Yeah, much. Thank you.
Should I start over?
Why don't you go ahead and start there? Start over. That's fine.
I started this writing this testimony 3 months ago when this hearing was originally scheduled. I don't think any of us could have imagined how extremely the world would change in such a short time. March feels like another dimension, and it's just starting to dawn on us that we aren't ever going back to normal. But we know that that's a good thing, because our old normal is one in which safety, justice, and opportunity are benefits of privilege rather than universal rights. We refuse to go back to that normal, and it's up to all of us to embrace our role in shaping the next normal. In this context, the question of how to amend the Residential Infill Project seems pretty small. But by small, I don't mean inconsequential. I mean comparatively easy. Improving the policy to make it legal for more people to reasonably gain access to the amenities and opportunities of our city should be an easy decision to make. So while we're living in 2020, but somehow also 1919 and 1929 and 1968, let's not remain stuck in 1924 to 1959, when the exclusionary zoning policy whose intent and outcome was to discriminate against non-white Portlanders was established in the vast majority of our neighborhoods. So for the record, Business for a Better Portland applauds PBOT and BPS for working with the community to find a constructive solution to the infrastructure problem. We strongly support the deeper affordability bonus to help nonprofit developers provide more affordable housing for people who need it. Who are the people who need it? They are the so-called essential workers, nurses and grocery store managers, teachers and firefighters, restaurant staff. They are mechanics, estheticians, graphic designers, copywriters, bartenders, social workers, and artists. It's critical that all Portlanders continue to have housing options in all neighborhoods to avoid the negative impacts of displacement and sprawl. And as we all grapple with the historic nature of these times, I'm sure your jobs have never felt bigger. So thank you for taking the time today to take a small step toward making increased housing opportunities part of Portland's next normal.
Thanks, Sadie. Appreciate it very much.
Next is Nolan Leonhardt, followed by Cameron Harrington.
Hey, Nolan.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Hardesty, and Commissioner Udaly. I am grateful for the opportunity to reiterate my support for the Residential Infill Project. This effort represents an important transformation of our land use and housing policies to reduce displacement of low-income tenants and also reduce market-rate housing prices. I support the comments made by Portland Neighbors Welcome and 1000 Friends of Oregon, but I also want to express particular support for the Deeper Affordability Amendment to sharply reduce the per-unit cost for developers to create below-market housing on any lot. I also want to express my strong opposition to Amendment 7, which would continue to prioritize expensive housing at the expense of low-income housing and residents. I specifically reject the argument that we are somehow honoring the displaced African-American community by erecting barriers to housing that most people in our community can afford. I hope that you'll move quickly to implement the Residential Infill Project as the first of many steps that our city must take to improve access to housing and opportunity for all Portlanders. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nolan.
Next is Cameron Harrington, followed by Ezra Hammer.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the council. I'm a registered lobbyist with Living Cully. Also speaking on behalf of the Cully Housing Action Team, which is the grassroots community organizing group that Living Cully supports. And we strongly support the Residential Infill Project and its goal of expanding access to affordable homes in Portland's single dwelling zones. But for this code change to truly advance racial equity, rather than simply adding housing supply, it must be accompanied by measures that are going to produce regulated affordable homes and provide long-term stability for renters. Several such measures were outlined in written testimony from our organization along with several allies this past January. One of those suggested measures is being considered today, which is the Deeper Affordability Amendment, which we strongly support. However, we also encourage council to move forward with the other provisions that were suggested in January. These include specific ideas for incentives and subsidies that will facilitate the development of regulated affordable homes in single dwelling zones and ensure long-term stability for renters. On that last point, we're very proud to share our support for a tenant-led process to develop a tenant opportunity to purchase policy for Portland. A top policy would give all renters, including those living in single dwelling zones, the right to receive advance notice if their homes will be sold or redeveloped, and a pathway to purchase their own homes or decide for themselves if they would like to work with a nonprofit partner to keep their home affordable for the long run. Tenants deserve more transparency and a right to collective decision-making when it comes to the future of their homes. And that needs to apply to renters in single dwelling zones. So we do support the Residential Infill Project. We strongly support the Deeper Affordability Amendment, and we look forward to working with you all over the coming months to center and prioritize the voices of Black, Indigenous, and people of color renters as we develop a tenant opportunity to purchase ordinance that will provide greater stability for renters citywide. Thank you.
Thanks, Cameron. Appreciate it.
Next.
Commissioner Fritz has her hand up.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to the previous first of all, thank you everybody for testifying. And in response to the testifier before last who greeted the mayor, Commissioner Thardesty, and New Daly and not me, I just wanted to note that I'm part of the I experienced some of the digital divide. Although I have the privilege of a smartphone and a computer, I do not have audio or video capacity on my computer, but I'm watching so that I can see the presentations, and just wanted to let people know that I am paying attention. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
Next is Ezra Hammer, followed by Raymond Cunningham.
Ezra, good afternoon.
Ezra sent me an email. This is Sandra. He sent me an email saying he would like to testify the next time in next week.
Okay, thank you.
Then we'll go with Raymond Cunningham, followed by Luke Norman.
All right. Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. And thank you for the opportunity to speak before you all today, especially during this national crisis. I am here to testify in favor of the residential infill projects and amendments 1 through 4 and amendment 6. Amendment 6 will greatly help to reduce the per unit cost for developers and create opportunities for below market housing on all lots. Additionally, I hope you reject amendment 7 as this will carve out several high opportunity neighborhoods from developing more affordable housing that an average Portland household can afford. Also, I hope you consider that while the residential infill project and these amendments might seem isolated from the reckoning our nation is facing today, they are not. This project will help address the demands protesters in our streets are making for our society to address institutional racism and inequality. Zoning has historically been used to exclude minority communities and help contribute to inequities that permeate all parts of our society. While this project is not the only policy our city will need to pass to correct these wrongs, it is a step in the right direction to dismantling our racist institutions that uphold white supremacy. I urge you all to approve the residential infill project as well as amendments 1 through 4 and 6, and then I strongly urge you to also reject amendment 7. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Raymond.
Next is Luke Norman, and they'll be followed by Chris Blackmore.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Luke Norman, and I am a Irvington resident and a member of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhood Board, here to speak on their behalf. Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods strongly supports the residential infill project as it supports the 2035 Comprehensive Plan's vision to increase the amount of affordable housing across our neighborhoods. Regarding the amendments that are before Council today, we support amendment number 6, which will allow the creation of affordable housing with 6-plexes if with half of those units affordable to residents earning 6% of the area median income. We think this would be a great pilot opportunity for the affordable housing bonds that have recently been passed in Portland and by Metro, a great way of encouraging nonprofit developers to support this work. We also encourage council not to stop here, but to continue with the implementation of the Anti-Displacement Action Plan. This is important to protect our existing low-income residents. And we'd like council to look at multiple innovative opportunities, including ways to support the right to remain for residents in our neighborhoods. We believe that with RIP, it's a great and important first step to ensure residents of all income levels and family sizes are welcomed across our Northeast neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is Chris Blackmore, followed by Anna Kemper.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Chris Blackmore. I appreciate you taking the time to hear public comment on a zoning issue during this historic national moment. With that in mind, I will be brief. Single-family zoning is racist and exclusionary. This is a good time to get rid of it. The residential infill project isn't the solution to the crisis of affordability and racial exclusion facing our housing system, but it is one structural step we can take right now. I support Amendments 1 through 4 as well as 6, the deeper affordability bonus. I oppose Amendment 7. I ask that the council pass RIP, then continue this vital work on housing with local community leaders to develop robust anti-displacement policy. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Next is Anna Kemper, and will be followed by Anna Aziz Kahani.
Hi there, council members. Kemper. I'm speaking today on behalf of Sunrise PDX. We're a youth climate justice movement with hubs around the country, and my comments today come from both a climate as well as a racial justice perspective. Oregon's housing policy has an incredibly racist past with a history of redlining and gentrification. Continued gentrification has pushed Black and Brown communities out of the center parts of Portland to the far ends of the city. And in light of the recent protests in response to the murder of George Floyd, we have got to recognize racism and inequities when we discuss housing policy improvements. Overall, the Residential Info Project is a well-crafted and long-awaited reform, which should help reduce the displacement of marginalized communities in Portland while also reducing our city's carbon emissions. Creating dense, walkable, and affordable neighborhoods makes our city safer and more equitable and overall healthier for everyone. Sunrise is strongly in favor of Amendments 1 through 4, and especially 6, the deeper affordability bonus, but we cannot stop there. We need community-led anti-displacement strategies. We need justice for Black and Brown community members who have been systemically displaced in this city. Thanks for your time today, and I hope we can wrap up this meeting quickly so that our city can spend more time on addressing the police brutality we experience here.
Thank you, Anna.
Next is Anna Aziz Kahani, followed by John Liu.
Hi.
I just added that at the end.
Wait, can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. Loud and clear. Thanks.
All right. Hi, I'm Anna Aziz Kahani. I'm an immigrant, small business owner, lower middle class, homeowner in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood just south of Powell. I want to just start by thanking Commissioner Hardesty on her comments today about the excessive police violence and the tear gas against protesters. As a peaceful protester, I am disappointed that there hasn't been a stronger, clearer, unified message among our city's leadership addressing this issue and everything that needs to happen within the Portland Police Bureau. At first, I didn't want to address RIP during this time of civil unrest, but after thinking about it, it is the perfect time because RIP is racist, classist policy in disguise. I disagree that RIP is the anti-displacement strategy, and I disagree that single-family housing zoning is racist. I definitely understand that it has been in the past, but the way that RIP is written right now, it's going to continue that racist policy. RIP will destroy communities of color. Developers will come in, buy the last of all the affordable homes, and replace them with expensive duplexes, triplexes, and more. Smaller does not mean that it's going to be more affordable. In my neighborhood, single-family homes are being torn down, and multi-units are being put up, and they're empty because they're not affordable. We need amendments that are going to deter the demolition of sound, stable, and affordable housing. That is what will deter displacement. The RIP displacement study that was done was flawed because it did not take into account any induced displacement, which looks at the effects of upzoning and gentrification. And that is what has the racist and classist implications. Also, RIP will encourage corporate ownership of Portland's real estate. Communities of color need to be encouraged to buy property. That is how we create generational wealth. Who's going to own a quarter of a quadplex? Nobody. A corporate or out-of-state owner will own the entire quadplex, and that will perpetuate the cycle of keeping people as renters. RIP will also again tell communities of color and lower-income neighborhoods that we are not good enough to have a church tree canopy and yards, and that only rich neighborhoods can have those things. None of the amendments address any of these things. The real problem is not shortage of housing. We have thousands of empty units here in Portland. The real problem is not shortage of land. The 2035 plan allots for over 200,000 new units. The real problem is housing affordability. And the cause of that housing affordability crisis is a global trend of private equity firms that buy up residential real estate everywhere. RIP, as it is right now, will make it more attractive for them to do that here in Portland. So it'll add to the problem and at the same time displace our vulnerable Black, Brown, lower income, and elderly communities. Isn't it interesting that Andre Bao, the only Black man on the Planning and Sustainability Commission voted against RIP because he thought it would destroy the communities of color. He said it was racist policy. I urge you guys to listen to him and not sell our city out to white, rich developers. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna.
Next is John Liu, followed by Brooke Bess.
Okay, I unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, John.
Okay, sorry for my little bobble there.
No worries.
So we're, as everybody knows, in a pandemic, we're in an economic depression. And I'm going to follow on with what Anna said. This is the worst possible time when you would want to accelerate displacement by encouraging the demolition of natural affordable housing to build expensive housing. So we're basically in for a repeat of 2008, 2009, but much, much worse, right? We know what happened then. People struggle to pay their mortgages, they struggle to pay their rent, they get evicted. Speculators and developers grab that property, they redevelop it with expensive housing, or it goes into enormous national portfolios of rental housing. And they brag about being able to raise rents by 7% year over year. And those people who are evicted are usually lower income, often communities of color, and they never ever get to come back. So RIP will just accelerate that. What RIP does is it makes property more valuable, right? The more development rights you have, the more valuable the property is. So that gives people an incentive to get rid of the existing occupants and sell and redevelop. So in the history of RIP, I and many others have asked council to fix this, not to reject RIP, okay? Not to reject density, but to fix RIP by requiring that in all RIP development, one unit at least be affordable, whether it's a duplex on up. Okay, so the council has rejected that. So RIP continues to permit the $1 million duplex units and the $600,000 quadplex units. We also ask council to slow RIP down until there's an actual effective and well-funded anti-displacement plan. So council's rejected that as well. There is still no anti-displacement plan, and the huge hole blown in our city budget, well over $100 million in counting, means that there will be no funding for a really effective anti-displacement plan in the next couple years. There just won't be the money. And during this time period, Portland will be at the mercy of the developers. So the response we've always gotten, both from council staff and from the Bureau, is, and I'm doing some air quotes here, you're wrong, RIP will benefit low-income families, and it will reduce displacement, and it will reduce gentrification. So the last thing we did was we met with Commissioner Udaly's office, and we asked for another amendment. We said, look, can you ask the city to at least carefully monitor and publicly report the effects that RIP has over the coming years, right? Accurately track what gets demolished, what gets built, the price and size of each, and try to assess the demographics of the people who are displaced versus the people who get to benefit. That request has also not received action. So as what is probably gonna be my final attempt to not reject RIP, but fix RIP, I would ask someone in the council to bring forward what I'm calling a monitor and report amendment. The idea is in several years, we can all come back with real data to show, hey, how well has RIP worked? Right? Were people like John and Anna right, or were other people right? And if it turns out that things need to be fixed with RIP, we'll have the data to do it. Because right now what's going to happen is we're going to come back in 10 years and we're going to say, oh my gosh, Portland has been gentrified even worse. There are even fewer communities of color here. What did RIP do? And the Bureau will say, well, we don't really have the data. We'll study it for another 10 years. And by then it'll be too late.
All right, thank you. And just a note on that, the council did not reject the mandatory affordable housing unit as part of a fourplex. What happened there was the state prohibits a local jurisdiction from requiring this. So it wasn't about intent. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say that I speak for myself. I have no intentions of waiting 10 years to see the effect of RIP. We as a council have the opportunity every year to have updates on what's working and what isn't, and to change it as we move forward. It is my belief that once we have completed this long multi-year process, we will put in place a system so that we are annually getting reports on what's working and what isn't. So do not feel like just because you don't see an amendment that we aren't interested in tracking and making sure that we are getting exactly what we want to get out of RIP. Thank you so much for your testimony.
And Commissioner Udaly would like to speak as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. This is a conversation that I have had with BPS. I've repeatedly expressed my concerns that despite their best intentions, that we may not see the type of housing that we're hoping to generate, the numbers we're hoping to generate, and that I want an annual report. So there may be an amendment forthcoming. I haven't lost sight of that, and I've worked very closely with community advocates to advance anti-displacement measures, and I've never backed away from that. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next individual, Carla.
Next is Brooke Best, followed by Susan Lindsay.
Okay, can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay, my name is Brooke Best, and I'm a member of the Architectural Heritage Center's Advocacy Committee. I want to thank you all for your hard work navigating RIP now in its final stage for public comment. I did submit written testimony on the deeper affordability bonus amendment, so I'm going to focus on the historic resources amendment. So we strongly support this amendment that disincentivizes demolition for sites with historic buildings and is parallel to the one adopted for multi-dwelling zones in the Better Housing by Design. And it's also consistent with the comp plan's policy 4.17. As proposed, it only applies to designated contributing buildings within historic or conservation districts. It doesn't apply to all the majority of ranked resources, those that have been designated as significant in the historic resource inventory, but they're not landmarks or located in any districts. And on a personal note, I support very strongly the comments presented by both Anna and John of PCHR, of which I'm also a member. And I strongly support the request for a monitor and report amendment. I share their sentiments about RIP and appreciate their eloquence on the nuances and unintended consequences of RIP, which will impact Portland's livability while having no measurable impact on affordability, housing for families. Thank you again for this opportunity during these very challenging times. We're taking on a really, really complicated subject, and I think you guys have done a terrific job.
Thank you, Brooke. That's appreciated. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for your testimony, Brooke. I just wanted to remind everyone, you alluded to the Better Housing by Design restriction, and in that project, we decided that we're going to have more work done on historic inventory and coming to council. The challenge with both that, but both Amendment 7 and with the monitoring, is that once you've given, you can't take away without paying for it. That then becomes a taking under land use law. Mm. So it would be better, in my mind, to move slowly where we have some questions, because once it's done, it's done. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Next individual, Carla.
Is Susan Lindsay, followed by Eric Lindsay.
Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Udaly, Fritz, and Hardesty. I'm Susan Lindsay, and I've come to talk to you on this subject several times before. I have two words to say, West Hills. So it's very interesting to me to hear so many speakers talk about the need to get the residential infill project in place and going in order to bust up the privileges within the city of Portland in terms of housing, and yet to look at that map app and see again continued such large swaths of the West Hills, historically the power, wealth, and influence of the city of Portland, excluded from the residential infill project. And even the properties that are the many of the R7s that might be eligible are also excluded because maybe a small portion of them falls under a natural resource zone or overlay. So I am discouraged by this because I believe that so many people who are not from Portland, and I am from Portland, do not really know the history of where the power base of the city of Portland is. And it is not out all over the east side that is going to be subject to the changes that will take place from this project, that many of which I believe strongly, many affordable properties will be torn down, will be replaced with unaffordable rentals or plexes, and that what we will see is displacement. We will see loss of opportunity for people of lower means to be able to stay in the city of Portland or to be ever to be able to afford a home. And at the same time, the West Hills and their single family homes on their R10 properties or their R7s with small natural resource overlays will be protected from this density, even though they are close in, close to amenities, have the best schools, best test scores, lowest crime, closest to the city of Portland, to the central city core, and yet we're written out of that. If this isn't racist policy being continued, I don't know what it is. I've come before you guys. I went before the Planning Commission. I've brought this up endlessly, and I get nowhere with it, but I'm bringing it up again. And thank you for listening.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Susan.
Next is Eric Lindsay, followed by Paul Frazier.
Hi, Eric. Hey. My name is Eric Lindsay, and I want to say thank you to council and staff for the really hard work of crafting the residential infill project. And I also want to thank you for taking the time in the midst of both a pandemic and really important calls for justice that are ringing out in Portland and across the country. I am speaking to urge you to pass the RIP. Unlike a lot of people, and maybe not very popularly, I am a builder, a developer, and a real estate asset manager. And one of the things that's particularly important to me is Amendment Number 6, the Deeper Affordability Amendment, as I know firsthand how important it is to reduce per unit development costs for new affordable housing. I also strongly oppose Number 7 for reasons that others have already elucidated. One more thing I wanted to mention is that obviously RIP is not the last thing that's needed. It's just one step along the way. After the passage of RIP, I really hope that the city will turn to meaningful anti-displacement policies that have both teeth and funding. As a landlord and asset manager, I often see ways in which renters are never given the opportunity to gain more control or ownership over their homes. And I really want to encourage the city to move with deliberate speed to enact a tenant opportunity to purchase, such as that is being proposed by community groups like Living Cully. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for the excellent work that you guys are doing.
Thank you. We appreciate it very much, Eric.
We have Paul Frazier, and they'll be followed by Neon Brooks.
Hi, Paul.
Hello. Thank you to the mayor and to the commissioners. My name is Paul Frazier. The residential infill project is a carefully crafted, long-awaited reform project. It is a start and only a start. Please do not stop here. These reforms are only part of what the city must do, including a meaningful and funded anti-displacement strategy led by community experts. I support 1 through 4, 6, and reject 7, which would create more division and confusion. Historic housing is a made-up idea. If we honored historic housing, there would be no houses, just trees for the birds and the deer. Deeper affordability is key. Make it as incentivized as possible and be open to making it even better. I'm the water can guy. Can't see me. It's like buying cans of sparkling water. When I'm offered an incentive, I buy 2 cases, 3 cases, 4, even 6 cases to my wife's chagrin. Without an incentive, I only buy 1. We can use incentives to get affordable housing. We need more housing than ever to house our neighbors, and we need more tax revenue more than ever. Perhaps we could use some of that tax revenue to fund our body camera program, or perhaps just take some from the tear gas and flashbang budget, which made me cry on Sunday, and I could see a cloud coming to the square last night with flashbangs interrupting the speakers. Don't be afraid of quadplexes. On a corner lot near me, four families can now live where one house used to stand. It creates more total units. We need them. Get creative to fund body cameras. Black Lives Matter and the police keep lying, so we need the tape. Every day we wait, more single-family homes get built. The status quo allows for one-to-one demolitions. With RIP, we create more units instead of just getting larger houses. Thank you to Commissioner Fritz for your many years of service. I truly mean that. And I love your visibility in the public and marching in parades. It's an inspiration. I've listened to your comments, and I'd like you to ask for solutions instead of problems. It's been a while since the last conversation, but your concerns about sewer pipes and charging electric cars stuck with me. We can build more pipes if needed, and the city has already shown the ability to put chargers curbside, and ideally, we won't even have more cars if we're hitting our city's climate goals. So, if possible, can we engage in a dialogue? Why are you still opposed to this, and how can we get you on board? I yield my time.
Thanks, Paul, for your perspective. Commissioner Fritz.
I've offered solutions, and they haven't been accepted, so that's why I'm still very concerned about this. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Next is Neon Brooks, followed by Charlie Burr.
Hi there. Thanks to the last speaker. I'm going to agree with a lot of what he said. My testimony is less polished because of everything that is going on. My name is Neon Brooks. I'm currently a member at large of the Grant Park Neighborhood Association, but I'm not representing them here. I'm representing myself. I grew up in inner Northeast Portland, mostly at the Concordia and King neighborhoods. And watching those neighborhoods transform and become so unaffordable over time, I feel like I'm seeing opportunities denied to children such as me and future generations. And now in Grant Park neighborhood, we desperately need more diversity, more affordability, so that these neighborhoods are available and accessible to a full range of people. I think all neighborhoods benefit from having mixed affordability and incomes, and people, and also not just having single people living in this neighborhood, having, teachers be able to form homes in this neighborhood, and so forth. Not to mention the climate benefits of higher density housing, especially close in, where transit and biking accessible. So I strongly am in favor of finally passing RIP, strongly in favor of the deeper affordability amendment, continuing to work on this issue because this is not a silver bullet. There's a lot more that needs to be done, and also banning tear gas. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your perspective, Neon. Appreciate it.
Next is Charlie Burr, followed by Nick Burry.
Good afternoon, Charlie.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Commissioners. My name is Charlie Burr. I live in the King neighborhood, and I'm here with my daughter, Marini. This is today's civics class. So Marini is a Tubman sixth grader, and we are here to strongly endorse RIP, and specifically the deeper affordability bonus amendment. Marini is also going to be my timekeeper, so I will keep it short and sweet. This is an important step to stabilize costs, to have a good policy for Portland's environment that will lower per capita energy usage, and will just make it easier to have affordable places close to transit. Finally, this is going to lead to good neighborhood design. We are strongly in favor of it. We appreciate all of the work that has gone into it, thousands and thousands of hours, so please pass it. And yes on Amendment 6. Also opposed to Amendment 7 that moves us in the wrong direction. I also appreciate the previous comments made by Andrea Durbin about density and coronavirus. Meredy and I are right now in our guest house, ADU, and although it wasn't the original intent of the structure, we were able to lend our current ADU out to a local doctor who needed to self-quarantine for the past month and a half or so. Having more housing choices can be an important part of our community's resilience. So thank you for the work you've done to get us this far. And this is certainly part of an ongoing effort, but I appreciate the significant support. Mary, do you want to add anything?
Let's keep Portland accessible to everyone.
All right, good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlie, Marion, thank you both. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Charlie. I want to ask your daughter, what grade are you in?
I'm in sixth grade.
In sixth grade. Do you have a diversity of students in your class?
Yes. Since Tubman was built, it was originally founded in like the 1900s, but it's been rebuilt and there's a huge diversity of students.
And do you enjoy going to a school that's really diverse with people from all over the world?
Yes, I get to learn about all different cultures. And it's way better than my old school, Saban, which only had a handful of African-Americans and Latinas. And it was basically just like mostly white. So Tubman is way better with diversity.
And I know that your dad did an excellent job of teaching you about RIP and what the impacts of RIP will be in your neighborhood, because I know your daddy and your daddy's daddy.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, I just want to say briefly, thank God for all the teachers out there, because this stuff has been really hard. So here's to keeping it affordable for all the teachers so they can live in this neighborhood.
Well, I just want to appreciate you bringing your daughter and having her see our democracy in work, even if it is virtually. It's an opportunity. We're always pleased to have young people participate in our city council meetings. So thank you both, and enjoy the rest of your sunny day.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Appreciate it. Thank you, Commissioner.
Next is Charlie Burr, followed by
Charlie just spoke.
I'm sorry, Mayor, what was that?
Charlie just spoke.
Oh, I'm sorry. Next is Nick Burry, followed by Kua Jiang.
Very good. Nick, welcome.
Hey, commissioners. My name is Nick Burry. I'm an organizer with Sunrise PDX. There are a lot of issues we need to be discussing right now, chief among them being the brutal policing tactics we're witnessing here every night. But RIP needs attention as well. We already know that densifying our housing stock is one of the one of many essential tools for fighting the climate crisis. That's why Sunrise PDX is here to support the Residential Infill Project and the amendments recommended by Portland Neighbors Welcome. RIP is a crucial foundational step in undoing some of the harms of Portland's racist housing codes, adding much needed density to our metro area, increasing affordability to address our housing crisis, and combating the climate catastrophe. To that end, we need to pass Amendments 1 through 4, and we need to ensure Amendments 5, 7, and 8 through 17 remain out of the final project. Most importantly, though, we need to make sure Amendment 6, the deeper affordability bonus, gets passed. We need to ensure that the solutions we implement to fight the climate and housing crises are equitable and don't leave out marginalized communities. Amendment 6 brings us closer to that goal by ensuring that the dense housing built as a result of this project isn't just a luxury housing giveaway to developers, but is available to folks in the middle unaffordability zone. All that said, passing this project, even in the best possible condition, is not enough. We need to use this momentum to surge forward on anti-displacement policies, building more deeply affordable homes, allowing mixed income buildings, and adopting strong funding and zoning reforms to fight homelessness. RIP is a great step, but it needs to be the first of many. Stop tear gassing peaceful protesters. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next is Kua Jiang, followed by Tamara DeRitter. Looks like we'll go with Tamara DeRitter, followed by Andrew Goodell.
Tamara, are you on board?
I am now.
Thank you. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you for having me. My name is Tamara DeRitter. I'm actually testifying on behalf of the Grove City Park Neighborhood Association tonight. And I wanted to say that We virtually met yesterday and reaffirmed our letter of March 4th and added an addendum. The March 4th letter includes opposing the city council proposed amendments and that were dated in February. We have not had a chance to meet since then. Supporting the findings and conclusions contained in this letter that document the failure of the RIP to comply with the policies and growth concepts in the 2035 comprehensive plan. Those include allowing 4 to 6 units on a typical R5 lot that is 50 by 100 subverts the single dwelling policies. Allowing multifamily dwellings to be constructed on the same beyond walking distance to high frequency transit fails to support the TSP and the plan growth concepts. We request that the City Council remand the RIP back to the Planning Sustainability Commission to correct these errors. The addendum says, if RIP is implemented, then let's make it truly a measure for affordable housing and equitable housing. The board agrees at this time that the 80 MFI, that's median family income, housing that is to be provided with all these new dwellings, be actually 60 MFI. And that is because during the time of COVID, we have seen enormous gut punch to our economy as well as people's incomes. And we need to create the most housing for the greatest need in our community. If the City Council chooses to proceed with RIP, please, please update your economic reports. Place the multifamily dwelling units along corridors and centers and make all new units available at 60 MFI. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Carl, I noticed in the chat, so I was having troubles unmuting. So maybe a phone call and we could.
You'll try to get back on and then we'll get her renumbered.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Next is Andrew Goodell, followed by Tim Davis.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Good afternoon. Mayor and commissioners, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thanks for your time, especially now. I'm Andy Goodell. I live and work in Northeast Portland. I'll be brief. I support the residential infill project and the proposed amendments 1 through 4 and 6, and I'm against 7. I believe in housing as a human right, and I think that Portland, as a progressive city, can and should end exclusionary zoning and legalize abundant housing. Amendment 6 in particular, the deeper affordability bonus, would probably go a long way towards this, as we've heard from these housing nonprofits. Anyway, the best time to build small plexes, duplexes, and little A affordable housing throughout Portland was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, but we didn't do it. And so, you know, these things we're not going to catch up overnight. But I think that this RIP would be an important step in that direction. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Appreciate your perspective.
It looks like we have Kwa Jiang online now, so we'll go with her, them, followed by Tim Davis.
Great. And Carl, after this, could we get a check just to make sure between this session and the next one, we think we're on track, given that we have a hard out at 5 today?
Okay.
Thanks.
Hello, this is Kua. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, Kua. Thank you very much. Okay. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
No, my apologies. Thank you. My name is Kua Zhang. I am here on behalf of the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, or APANO, to express our support for using the residential infill project as one way to establish new, truly affordable housing in Portland. I want to echo the ask from our partners today, including Living Cully and Community Alliance of Tenants. If not today, I believe they will be testifying next meeting. First, I want to thank you for making time for this meeting and acknowledge that anti-Blackness has permeated every system in this country, including housing. And we must center Black lives in this work and continue to work alongside the Black community. Apano has long prioritized inclusive neighborhoods and prevented displacement through community development advocacy and tenant organizing in the J District. In the J District, we have a large number of renters who live with multi-generational families. The residential infill project is one way to begin offering more affordable housing for multi-generational families without pricing them out of their own neighborhoods. With discussions in our communities, their housing needs require a neighborhood design that allows for density and a pathway to truly affordable housing. We also want to uplift in adding components of the tenant opportunity to purchase and right of first refusal to ensure that struggling low-income renters can have a pathway towards a better life. In 2016, when low-income residents of Douglas Square and the J District were at risk for being priced out of their homes, we quickly organized with tenants who were largely Chinese immigrant families to ensure they were not displaced. If tenant opportunity to purchase and right of first refusal policies were in place, we could have gone beyond preventing displacement and actually created a new asset for our community to by creating long-term affordable housing. We ask that the council supports a tenant-led initiative to develop a tenant opportunity to purchase policy. Everyone is worthy of a stable, healthy home. I ask that you please support measures within RIP that will create sustainable, affordable housing. Thank you for listening and your efforts to continue helping low-income Portlanders have opportunities to be in our neighborhoods throughout the city. Thank you.
Thanks, Ku. Appreciate it.
After Tim Davis, I show about 25 more people on the line.
All right, good. We'll definitely get through it in our two sessions. Thank you.
Okay. So next is Tim Davis, and they'll be followed by Sam Sturkey.
Hi, Tim.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and the rest of City Council and everyone. This is Tim Davis, and for decades, official housing policy has been incredibly destructive to the planet, to equity, and to racial justice. It's time to make massive changes, and passing RIP is a small but crucial first step. The police are on everyone's minds right now, and there are striking parallels with housing and zoning. The police system itself was created to protect the rich in the wage labor form of capitalism, and particularly to control the working class and the poor, rather than to serve and protect. Similarly, our land use, transportation, and exclusionary housing system has literally systematically divided people by race, class, and privilege for decades. And RIP will at least rip out a tiny sliver of this exclusion and reduce racism. Regarding the amendments, I support amendments 1 through 4, and I'm extremely excited about Amendment 6. Thank you so much, Commissioner Udaly and others for this. It just warms my heart. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. And I oppose Amendment 7, which has good aspirations, but it will only increase the rich-poor divide by exempting already wealthy neighborhoods from allowing middle housing. Plus, our city code makes repurposing large single-family homes into subdivided apartments nearly impossible. And regarding demolition and displacement, RIP began, of course, over concerns about small homes being demolished and replaced by much larger single-family homes. And let's not forget that all non-subsidized new housing, again, non-subsidized new housing, including duplexes and triplexes, are, of course, incredibly expensive for many reasons. So arguments about affordability are a little bit ridiculous in this case. RIP is anticipated to reduce demolitions by 28% citywide. Every day that RIP is not passed, more Portlanders are displaced than otherwise would be. Plus, opponents, they always talk about, you know, displacement and affordability, but what about the people who do not live in expensive close-in neighborhoods and who want to live there and have wanted to for decades for many reasons? Close to work, walkable, eco-friendly, lots of amenities. They are already the displaced ones. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
Next is Sam Stuckey, followed by Henry Kramer.
Hi, Sam.
Hi. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, for taking the time to hear us. Also, thank you to everyone else who's chimed in today to share their testimony. I know many of us have our minds elsewhere right now. I just wanted to say that I support the passage of the residential infill project. I look forward to seeing greater diversity throughout all of our neighborhoods, and I know that allowing a greater diversity of housing options is just the first step, and we cannot wait any longer. With that in mind, I hope you give great consideration to Amendment 6, as deeper affordability means greater opportunity for that diversity to reach further into all areas of the city. I can't imagine a greater legacy for members of this city council to leave behind. That is all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is Henry Kramer, followed by Janara Ramirez.
Hi, Henry.
Hey there. Mayor Wheeler, city commissioners, my name is Henry Kramer. I'm a homeowner in the King neighborhood of Northeast Portland, and I'm an organizer with Portland Neighbors Welcome, but speaking only for myself. First off, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to listen to testimony during this moment where I know I'm not the only person who's finding it almost impossible to focus on anything other than police brutality. I'm asking you to take the humble step toward dismantling exclusionary zoning and residential segregation by enacting the Residential Infill Project with the proposed technical amendments 1 through 4 and the Deep Affordability Bonus 6, Amendment 6. Also want to ask you to reject the counterproductive conservation district carve-out Amendment 7, as well as tabled Amendment 5 and tabled Amendments 8 through 17. You know, even with the vital adoption of Amendments 1 through 4 and 6, Residential Infill Project on its own is just one small step toward building a more just city, but it's a necessary step. We have big things to do in this city, reining in an out-of-control police force, building a climate-resilient city, providing stable housing to all people experiencing homelessness, preventing and repairing the displacement of communities of color and low-income communities. I think we would all love to turn our focus to that. But we have a state mandate to act on this, and we've spent 6 years mulling over this question. There are first graders going to school up the street from my house who weren't born yet when we started working on this. We have reached a humble, moderate answer that any reasonable person can support. You're at the 1 yard line here. It's time to move on it and move forward. Thank you very much for your time. Please adopt residential infill as soon as possible. I yield the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Next is Janara Ramirez, followed by Diane Lynn.
Welcome, Janara.
Thank you, Mayor, and City Council members for allowing testimony. Like the person said, my name is Janita Ramirez, and I am a renter in Northeast Portland. And I'm here to support the Residential Infill Project, and especially in support of Amendment 6, the Deeper Affordability Bonus. As this amendment incentivizes affordable and smaller, more multifamily units, which is a strategy that is culturally relevant to communities of color and allows Portland housing options to be more accessible to our diverse population. As many have said before me, this is only one of the many steps our city needs to ensure housing stability. As a renter, I personally see housing stability to not only mean affordability. Housing stability to me speaks to residents' capacity to mitigate change in their lives, like losing a job on your regular life, but also losing a job in the middle of a pandemic and other life occurrences that might cause a family to be displaced out of their neighborhood or displaced out of the city. Housing stability speaks to their ability to remain in place, and that's just to be able to afford that house or that unit depending on their job. And I fear that the number of people who are displaced out of the city would rise as many of the low-income renters are facing severe financial hardships during this time. The amendments submitted by ADPDX, the Anti-Displacement Coalition, in January speaks to actions that can allow renters to be more stable in their housing and have more options and to some extent work towards ownership, like the suggested right to stay suggestion and the tenant opportunity to purchase. Housing stability helps everyone mitigate uncertainty better, and it allows us to create more resilient neighborhoods where families, low-income renters, and folks with mixed income can all live together. And I look forward, like I said before, this is only one step in order to address our affordable housing crisis. Not that we're having just a housing crisis, we are having a crisis of affordability in our city and many cities across the state. And I look forward to work that comes out of the city council member, out of the council, to move forward and provide better pathways to homeownership for low-income renters and medium-income renters, as well as other tenant protections for renters who do not see ownership as their next step right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Diane Lynn, followed by Rowena Paz Norman.
Hi, Diane.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for listening to all of us during these extraordinarily difficult times. I honor your, all of your service. Proud Ground joins Habitat for Humanity of Portland Metro East in our enthusiastic support for both the residential infill project in general and for the deeper affordability bonus amendment to allow for additional FAR and sixplexes. Program partners with Habitat to provide first-time home ownership opportunities, and for the reasons that were just discussed, the stability that brings to their kids and families is so very important. And these are for families living between about 35 and 80% of median income. In addition to Habitat's achievement of over 90% people of color, we also serve families of color with a wait list of over 500 families, three quarters of whom are families of color. This kind of public policy move is critically important right now and especially poignant. Our homeownership models that we have in place here in Portland rely on identifying property zones appropriately for family-sized units and neighborhoods across the city. If this deeper affordability bonus is approved, in addition to Habitat expects to build on double-sized lots, Prog Grant is also hoping to partner with builders to add even more units in a very cost-effective way. These six-unit properties on infill lots would allow Prog Ground to add to the pipelines for homes in neighborhoods all around the city that are very amenity-rich in communities that have experienced so much gentrification and have caused so much displacement. Reestablishing economic and cultural diversity that was once taken for granted back in the Portland I grew up in is a critical role, and especially now. So this upward trajectory of possibility for more and more homes, and I think the monitoring support to see how well we do and what it's going to take to remove barriers to continue to create more units for more and more families is critically important. We so appreciate your time and look forward to the final passage of RIP finally after so much work and effort. Portland is finally moving in the right direction as it relates to single family zones. And we thank you for your support for residential infill and the deeper affordability amendment.
Thank you, Diane. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next is Rowena Paz Norman, followed by Sean Green.
Hi, Rowena. Rowena, are you on? And can you try?
I am on. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud
and clear. There we go. Hi, everyone. My name is Rowena Paz Norman, and I first want to thank Mayor Wheeler and the commissioners for your time. I'm speaking on behalf of Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon, an anti-hunger advocacy group. Partners support the residential infill project and amendment number 6 because of the strong relationship between housing and food insecurity. In a tight family budget, rent and utilities won't budge, yet rice can be squeezed. Food is the most elastic of basic needs. A key reason that Portland and Oregon have spent decades high up in the national hunger rankings is that housing costs have risen so much faster than wages. The rapid rise of rental costs in the Portland metro area and in other places in Oregon could be a driving force in the jump in food security, according to Oregon State sociology professor Mark Edwards. This connection between housing and hunger is also demonstrated by a study from Harvard's Joint Center for Housing Studies that found that low-income families with affordable housing have more food security. And this study was shared with council in an email that I sent earlier today. I encourage council to pass residential infill with amendment number 6 to keep working on housing through the future anti-displacement plan to support partners' efforts to build a hunger-free Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Okay, next we'll go with Sean Green, and they'll be followed by Michael Steffen.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. Thank you, commissioners and mayor, for hearing my testimony. I just wanted to say that I've been working on this issue for over 5 years, back when I was chair of the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association, involved with the Southeast Uplift Neighborhood Coalition. And I continue that work as Vice Chair of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods and Co-Chair of the Land Use and Transportation Committee at NECN. You heard earlier about the support by NECN for this proposal from my colleague Luke Norman, and I wanted to echo that support, and I'm here to say that the time is now to support this, and we're ready, and I feel strongly that this is going to make our city a better place. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go with Michael Steffen, and they'll be followed by Chris Maracini.
Hi, Michael.
Hi there. This is Mike Steffen, Sawid resident. Came to Portland 27 years ago, I guess now, because it was a city on a hill. It was a light in our nation, in its leadership. Then, and it is still today, and I think what's been done with the planning work and the policy work on the RIP project is phenomenal. I support it, and my family support it 100%, and I share the concerns that many have mentioned about Amendment 7 and carving out certain neighborhoods from the requirements. But I just wanted to stayed on the record a wholehearted endorsement that, and yes, as many have said, it's time to move forward with this and now. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Next is Chris Maracini, followed by Lincoln Tuchow.
I see Chris, he's muted. Chris, can you unmute?
It was Chris Maracini.
Okay, Chris is on. Yeah, we hear you, Chris. Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready?
You're ready to go.
Okay, thank you. All over East Side Portland, green spaces are disappearing with the cementing over of lawns and landscaping to build apartments and 4, 6, and 8-plexes. Green spaces in East Side Portland help lower temperatures of all of Portland during hot summer months and filter smog on high pollution days. These green spaces also slow down water runoff. Lack of comprehensive infrastructure considerations is also a big concern. The January 2020 edition of the Oregonian reported 4.8 million millennials are reaching 30 years of age in 2020, a prime age for many to purchase their first home, not a rental, but a house. Current research also indicates most people want a yard and storage, especially due to COVID-19 issues. The city's RIP ignores these trends. Home ownership encourages longer community commitments and more stability than rentals. Homeowners are the ones who vote to pay higher property taxes in order to improve Portland schools and support community resources. As a teacher, the educational ramifications of Portland's RIP puts Eastside schools and students' educational success in jeopardy. The city's RIP is exclusionary in and of itself. It encourages gentrification and is making home ownership only possible for the wealthy. It is giving many Portlanders the only option of renting, thereby allowing the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. The whitest part of Portland is Southwest Portland. It is a shame that neither diversity nor density is addressed in the city's RIP concerning Southwest Portland. The state HB 2001 recommending duplexes is enough. The city's RIP does not make Portland better. Rather than displacing residents and demolishing homes under the guise of affordability, solutions should be explored for eliminating displacement and gentrification and providing down payment mortgage assistance. Home ownership opportunities will be more available to a diverse population with the elimination of developers who are artificially raising house prices, and to help with strategies for giving mortgage assistance. Short-term profit should not be the major goal of Portland's RIP. Please choose health, safety, stability, livability, and home ownership opportunities over short-term profit. It is vital to Portland's future. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Next is Lincoln Tuchow, followed by Margaret Davis.
Hi, Lincoln.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me here. Greetings, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Fritz. Hard to see you daily. My name is Lincoln Tuchow, and I'm a board member of the Architectural Heritage Center, as well as a residential real estate agent here in Portland. I'm here to speak in support of Amendment Number 7, the Historic Resources Demolition Disincentive. As a realtor, I can tell you that zoning changes, which allow up to a fourplex on most single-family zoned residential lots, will put tremendous demolition pressure on Portland's historic buildings. This same proposal was adopted for multifamily zones in Better Housing by Design, and it makes good sense to extend the demolition disincentive to single-family zones. This will allow us to protect those special residential buildings that help define Portland and give it its unique character. Furthermore, discouraging the demolition of historic buildings is consistent with the goals of the 2035 Comprehensive Plan. It is also the green thing to do. Demolitions across the city will be an ecological nightmare, producing massive amounts of solid waste, releasing toxins into the neighborhoods, and creating a huge carbon and natural resources footprint. Adaptive reuse, on the other hand, of existing homes will reduce waste, preserve naturally occurring affordable housing, and help prevent displacement of lower income households. And an important part of this amendment is the extension of the demolition disincentive to contributing buildings within conservation districts. Many of these districts, such as Elliott, Piedmont, Mississippi, and Woodlawn, are historically Black neighborhoods which contain cultural sites important to the history of African Americans in Portland. Some of these stories were told by our founder, the Architectural Heritage Center, former executive director and founder, Kathy Galbraith, in her 1995 book, Cornerstones of Community, Buildings of Portland's African American History. Although quite a few of these buildings have been lost to demolition and redevelopment, I'm sad to say, numerous ones still remain and would benefit from this protection. Because there are numerous historically significant homes outside of historic and conservation districts, which will be threatened with demolition if RIP is approved, I propose that the demolition disincentive be extended to include ranked homes on the historic resources inventory that are not already on the historic landmarks, which are not already historic landmarks or contributing structures in a historic or conservation district. These homes have been identified for their significant contribution to Portland's history and architectural landscape, yet numerically they only represent a small fraction of the single family homes in the city. So in other words, the impact on RIP would be negligible, but the potential benefit to Portland would be great. Therefore, I encourage you to adopt this small modification. And thank you for letting me speak to you at this time. I realize there's a lot going on in the city and the world, which is, you know, of a major significance. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Lincoln. We appreciate it.
We'll hear from Margaret Davis, followed by John Gibbon.
Good afternoon, Margaret.
Hi, everybody. I have a few visuals that I sent to Keelan, I think, or Carla. I don't know who's supposed to put those up.
Yes, I'm pulling them up right now.
Oh, thank you, Keelan. All right. Well, I'm Margaret Davis. I live in Northeast Portland. I have these few visuals for you. Just looking at this first slide, I just have three pictures. I'm amazed that this market rate housing measure comes before you at such unprecedented times, but it does relate to issues on everybody's mind, and that's inequality and also health and safety. With rising income inequality across America, which I know you're not responsible for, we see dramatic gaps in treatment between the haves and have-nots. But here's how you can make a difference. By voting no on RIP and allowing affordable housing to remain standing and be reused. Remember, RIP isn't about affordable housing. Look at the last item on that slide. This was presented near to the beginning of the project. And it shows that affordable housing was not part of the scope of the project. We weren't even really allowed to discuss it at any of these open houses. So I'm surprised people are mentioning it, and I wish you had an air horn for every time it was intimated that RIP would bring us affordable housing. What's worse is RIP incentivizes the loss of affordable housing. When you offer a multi-unit payout where a single family house once stood, that house doesn't stand a chance. Keelan, can you go to the next slide? Can I get the next slide? So here's an example of RIP style development. And this is at 63rd and Mason in my neighborhood. A house that sold for $330,000 was demolished, and now the one there on the corner is selling for $685,000. So you will never get that $330,000 housing option back. And we will only be inviting wealthy people to live in our neighborhood, and that is inequality. We know that neighborhoods are stronger for their diversity, whether it's background, and here I'm talking specifically about income. Can I get the next slide, Keelan? Thank you. So that's inequality. So how about public health and safety? You know, really the reason why we're online today. Right now we battle something we can't see. This is a battle about something we can see. You can see the toxins coming out of the demolition there. By BDS's own recent estimate, about 90% of demolitions go unmonitored for hazmat control. And this is even after you pass the stringent rules that you thought you did. So right now, a BDS subcommittee, and this afternoon, it was meeting to give oversight of hazmat control during demolitions to an employee of the teardown builder. So basically, the no change from what you're going to see here. All it takes is that demo manager going off for lunch and oops, look what happened. So I miss Nick Fish, you know, for many reasons, but he publicly worried about the effects of demolition dust on his kid, as he should have. And I hope you will honor his legacy and that concern. Wait for a full council and full public participation before approving a rezoning that displaces more Portlanders and exposes us to even more toxins. Thank you so much. Thank you, Keelan, for the slide, Hope.
Thank you, Margaret.
Next is John Gibbon, followed by Stephanie Winters.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, thank you for letting me speak to you today. My name is John Gibbon. I'm representing the Southwest Portland neighborhood of Markham. And I'm here to express some concerns I have about some of the technical amendments that effectively impact uncurbed public and private streets in our area, and more or less relate to Amendment 5, which I know will be discussed next week, and express an opinion on what Markham would support in terms of Amendment 6. The thing that you have to understand in Portland, southwest or south of I-5, and there are 7 neighborhoods located south of I-5, we have don't yet have reasonable, safe, active transportation or transit options to access complete community resources. Those 7 neighborhoods are, with the closure of the Market of Choice on the corner of Taylor's Ferry Road and Twilliger, is a food desert. So all the way from roughly Boone's Ferry Road and Taylor's Ferry Road intersection to the Tigard City line, there is no market except 1 or 2 gas station markets serving that entire area. I will admit we have lots of people who have access to cars and use them a lot to access food resources on Barber Boulevard or in Lake Oswego, but the neighborhoods do not have any resources like that in our neighborhoods. This unfortunately has the effect of this is to unfortunately create parking problems on many of our streets and private roads, and create a special problems on our uncurbed streets and private roads. These uncurbed streets and private roads also cause stormwater issues and other infrastructure deficiencies in these areas create fire protection issues. Therefore, we are supporting Sweeney's request that we believe has been submitted to you to limit triplexes and fourplexes to only paved curb streets in Southwest Portland, and to limit the deeper affordability bonus to defined centers and corridors throughout our areas, in the hopes that focusing the density in those areas will enhance our very spotty transit service.
And that's 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Next, Rod Merrick, followed by Constance Beaumont.
Hey, Rod.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you guys. I've been involved in the RIP and its evolution from the beginning. It's been an ideologically driven process that has morphed with the times, all the while lacking much needed analysis and accountability. Additional density to support neighborhood centers is a longstanding policy that I, the neighborhood association that I chair, and many others strongly support. And this is where the emphasis should be. But the residential infill project is not a modernization of Portland zoning code, but an untested and radical inversion. The impacts are as divisive as its acronym might suggest, effectively handing over single-family neighborhoods across the city to investors for random density development. Advocates appeal to aspirations and ideology. Maybe it will be needed in 20 years. Maybe it will welcome new neighbors. Maybe it will produce innovative housing. Maybe it will advance social justice. Maybe it will lower housing costs. Maybe it was compelling that the unlikely bedfellows of 1,000 friends, real estate investors, and the home builders joined voices to advance their notion of how Portlanders should live. Maybe. Or maybe random density policies are a path to accelerated displacement of our most disadvantaged citizens, our most affordable housing, our most desired housing types, our adopted comprehensive planning goals for livability, homeownership, stable neighborhoods, compatible infill, reduced automobile dependency, and goals for resilience and sustainability. Leading to this point of final decisions, there has been no testing, an embarrassing lack of analysis, and no framework or standards for assessing the impact of these far-reaching policies. HB 2001 does not mandate density everywhere, as in the RIP. There is currently no shortage of land for this type of smaller scale, higher density development. Even the heavily lobbied Planning Commission found it a challenge to provide a green light for these policies. The reduced lot sizes and deeper affordability amendment under consideration are part of the pattern of ideologically driven agenda. It's become clear that the new higher density rental condo housing replacing older single family housing is not about affordability now or in the foreseeable future, and encouraging 6 and 8-plex housing everywhere is simply deeper deception. Displacement mitigation remedies remain ill-conceived without standards for accountability, and of course unfunded. For these reasons, we urge that if the RIP advances, it must be constrained by the mandated periodic assessment. This to be conducted by an independent auditor and published periodically. Comprehensive plan, the audit should be include a minimum of the assessment of the following indicators associated with additional density building permits for the single family zones, R2.5 to R20. Transportation impacts, and specifically transit ridership, pedestrian travel, parking congestion, auto ownership patterns, displacement of lower income residents and disadvantaged communities, housing affordability relative to income, ownership patterns, owner-occupied, small-scale investor-owned corporate ownership, displacement of middle-income families with children, urban density, almost there, urban tree canopy reductions and changes in the heat sink characteristics, and complaints about incompatibility of scale
Rod,
and design.
Rod, thank you. Your time is up. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go with Constance Beaumont, and she'll be followed by Alan Kessler.
Carla, sorry to interrupt. This is Andrew Durbin. Mayor, I just wanted to make note that now might be a good time to pause today's hearing and carry over to next week, because I know you need have a hard stop at 5, and you and council, and they'll probably want to talk about kind of the next steps.
Why don't we take this last person whose name was just called, and we'll continue after that.
Great.
Okay. Constance Beaumont.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Constance. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised because I kept typing in my password and it didn't seem to be working. But I'll be very brief. I support the comments that were made earlier by John Liu and Anna and the Lincoln Tuchow from the Architectural Heritage Center. I support the goals of RIP, but I'm disappointed that it takes a scattershot approach to density rather than focusing it along transit lines as recommended in the comprehensive plan. I confess to being influenced by the policies that Arlington County, where I lived for many years, has taken, where they focused density along transit and were successful in a dramatic reduction in car trips, a boost in transit use, and they did create affordable housing as well. I am concerned that amendment number 6 would increase the incentive for developers to destroy existing homes, thereby wasting natural resources embodied in them. I feel that it should not be necessary to destroy one community asset to create another. I agree with others who have recommended that if the city does decide to go ahead with the program, it should set up a system to monitor and report annually on the number of houses demolished, the number of households displaced, and the affordability or lack thereof of new structures replacing demolished homes. Finally, I support Amendment 7, which would discourage the destruction of historic resources, a resource that Oregon's Goal 5 was intended to protect. So thank you for your patience, and we'll move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Constance. All right, thank you everyone for your testimony. We know that this is an issue many people have been working on for a long time, and we're gonna continue public testimony on June 11th for those of you who already signed up to testify via Zoom. And of course, I wanna acknowledge there's a number of people who signed up who did not have a chance to testify today. So if you've signed up, your day will be June 11th. I encourage those of you who have already testified to watch at www.portlandoregon.gov/video on June 11th to listen to the testimony. If you didn't catch all that or write all that down, just go to the Portland City Council and you'll find it. I also encourage all participants to read the record and submit any additional written testimony into the record on Residential Infill Project page on the testimony app. I also want to thank staff who've worked hard to make it easy to listen and engage in this process, particularly our Smart Cities PDX staff. Thank you. I'll turn it back over to the Bureau Planning and Sustainability staff to give instructions for June 11th and next steps for the residential infill program. Andrea?
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you everyone who took the time to testify today, and really to all of you who have engaged in this process for the last 5 years. We really appreciate it, and your engagement has helped improve this proposed package. As the mayor said, we will resume next week, June 11th at 2:40 p.m., and look forward to hearing continue the testimony. We will come back to council on June 18th for deliberations of the amendments and a vote on the amendments, and look forward to a final vote in July. So thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Very good, and that concludes today's hearings. Colleagues, is there anything else anyone wants to say before we adjourn?
Mayor, I just want
Briefly, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Just for the record, just so everyone knows that the record is still open and will remain open, as Morgan previously announced, until June 11th at 8 p.m.
Very good.
And one final note, sorry to bug in again. Yep. So for the folks that didn't get to testify today, there were about 20 folks that we didn't hear from, plus another 23 that are still on our list. We will automatically roll those folks over to our next meeting, and we'll be sending out a registration to those folks, and that'll show up in their email shortly.
Thanks, Morgan. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Can people sign up to testify who have not already signed up?
Hi, it's Morgan again. So we closed the registration for the testimony on yesterday at 4 o'clock. So that is it for folks that want to testify orally. However, opportunities for written testimony are open, as Lauren said, until June 11th at 8 o'clock through the MAP app or through council clerk email.
Yeah, thank you for that. My concern is, as I've mentioned, the volume of emails that are currently coming in, that it's practically impossible to sort them, to look at, to find the RIP ones. So maybe you could give some thought to whether additional oral testimony might be allowed, a sign up.
And I'll defer to council on that question.
All right, very good. And thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and certainly we can consider that. All right, that concludes today's hearing. We'll pick it up again on June 11th. Until then, we are adjourned.